Hello and welcome to another episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman, my weekly podcast about film and music. Now, for those of you with good hearing, you may well hear a little bit of musical rumble in the background. Let me paint the scene for you because as recording this, I am in Glasgow hosting the Country to Country Glasgow end of the festival anyway for Radio 2. So it's been a whole weekend of amazing music. Kind of country just really dips its toe in so many genres, so it's been really great to immerse myself in this world. There's a fiddle player outside this production office who's warming up for his performance, so yeah, if you can hear that in the background, I just wanted to let you know why that was. It's got nothing to do with what we've got on this week's show, but just, I don't know, it's quite nice that this is a podcast where we talk about music and there's music in the background. But our guest this week is none other than Max Richter, composer extraordinaire, who's provided the music for Adam Sandler and Carey Mulligan's new film Spaceman. It's directed by Johan Rink and it tells a story of a Czech astronaut who's sent to the end of the solar system and encounters a creature that helps sort out his issues back on Earth. Now, the idea that this is a kind of sci-fi film, for me, it kind of crosses so many genres, but one thing that it does do is it gives us the opportunity to see Adam Sandler in those roles, kind of outside that comedy box that we see him in and enjoy him in so much. You know, when I think of things like the Safdie Brothers film or Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love, I love seeing Adam Sandler in those roles, and this is another example of this. There's definitely a bit of dark comedy in there, particularly with this creature that I talk about that's voiced by Paul Dano. And it, even though it's set in the kind of the outreaches of space, it's got such a personal story, really, because it's really about a relationship and really about communication as well. So I really enjoyed it. It's kind of, I really jump on things when I feel like it's a different experience, and this for me was a really different experience and a story that I felt like I hadn't heard. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and we love having Max on the podcast. He's so brilliant at articulating the intricacies of composing a score, and so we'll begin with his cue from Spaceman, A Message.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, lovely to see
Great.
You. Man, I was trying to think the last time that I spoke to you. It feels like a lifetime ago, to be honest. A lot's happened since then.
It's, yeah, it might be Mary Queen of Scots or something, or maybe Ad Astra, something like that.
Yeah.
It's been a while, right?
Been a while, yeah. But you haven't stopped. You know, it's so wonderful to kind of watch the complexity and the variety of what you do, you know, and kind of really pushing things as well. And I really enjoyed Spaceman. I felt like it was just, it's so great when you watch something and you kind of go in, and I try and do this a lot where I don't kind of cloud my kind of my thought process about it going in, so that you can try and be really fresh and go in kind of not knowing too much. And with this, I did that, and it was such a rich experience, I feel, from feeling like I was seeing something new and different, and I don't know, kind of it really pulled you in immediately to those characters and that situation. What was the appeal for you with this story and these characters and this particular project?
I think it's, you know, when I read it, I mean, Johan called me up and asked me to take a look at it. And I was, I mean, intrigued really immediately. First of all, obviously, you know, Johan is a brilliant director. So anything that he's involved with is going to be interesting. And then the second thing is, you know, Adam and Carey are both, you know, incredible actors. And obviously Paul is brilliant. Kunyal, I mean, fantastic cast, you know. So really exciting sort of team. And then the subject matter, I thought, was because it's this sort of strange hybrid sort of fictionalized universe set in Bohemia, Central Europe. It's a sci-fi, but it's also a very metaphorical kind of a love story. It's fantasy. It's got, you know, all the elements that I sort of love, really. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of had my name on it straight away.
Max written all over it.
Yeah, it did, really. Yeah, they wrote it for me.
I love, though, with Adam Sandler, when he kind of steps outside of that comedy arena that we know him for. And really, because I think I remember seeing him in Punch Drunk Love, you know, all those years ago, and kind of going, whoa. And just,
yeah, that was extraordinary.
The kind of weight of that performance was, and I think it is because there's that Surprise or the Safdie film that he did recently as well. I just thought I don't know why he doesn't do more of it, but when he does do that thing where he steps out that kind of, you know, that arena that we know and love him for, you know, Big Daddy, I just, you know, all those kind of comedy. And my 10-year-old was just watching the golf film. Oh my God, it's got a brain fart there that he loves. But there's something about him as a dramatic actor. I don't know what it is about it. It's just, and I wondered when you came into the project, had they started filming? Were you kind of privy to that performance?
I'm trying to think now. It's a while ago. I think they were sort of in the middle of shooting.
Yeah.
I did see some things quite quickly, but I wrote a lot of material just sort of free form off the script, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think Adam is, you know, he's a very, very talented and smart actor. And he has this very instinctive kind of human warmth about him, which obviously is wonderful for the kind of comedic side of his work. You know, he's the real thing. That guy can act anyone off the screen. He's fantastic. And I think him especially with pairing up with Carey, who is a force of nature, really, isn't she? I mean, she's incredible. Obviously, we've seen her in Maestro recently, and that was just, you know, insane performance. So, yeah, I think the two of them, they're both such powerful performers. Yeah, it was always going to be good.
Even, you know, that small part she has in Saltburn as well is just kind of like, it's so memorable. She steals every scene that she's in pretty much with that character. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, that's the kind of way. But again, that's a really interesting thing, I think, with her, in that it kind of, it's maybe a side of her that we haven't, you know, with the kind of comedy side of things as well, which, you know, you'd kind of hope that more people will give her the opportunity to kind of do, because we know that she's got the kind of the chops to do anything, really, as well.
Yeah, I agree.
You were talking about that kind of hybrid of genres in a way. Does that influence you in terms of, you know, but it's a very human story, but the score is really interesting because there are elements to it that have a real kind of sci-fi, kind of almost out of this world type feel to them as well. So I was interested to find out kind of where you moved towards when you were thinking about kind of sounds and instrumentation and how kind of traditional it would be or non-traditional with what you wanted to create. Yeah.
Obviously, it is, the story ultimately is about two people trying to connect to one another and to sort of understand one another and deepen their relationship, you know? I mean, so it's about people reaching out. It's very emotional. So for me, that meant, you know, traditional instrumentation, definitely. So an orchestra, some piano. But it's also, the whole story is kind of metaphorical. You know, we don't really know, you know, how much of this is real.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is it real? We don't know. And, you know, the deep space, the voyage is a kind of a, it's again, it's a metaphor. It's an image for something they're trying to achieve. You know, he's trying to reach, they're trying to reach one another. So that suggested something else, another kind of musical language, a more abstract musical language, something which was about kind of sonic representations of states of mind. So electronics, and also, you know, the character of Hanush, he's this kind of unknowable, strange presence.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's something quite eerie about it in a way.
Yeah.
So all of these things kind of fed into the kind of palette I built. And then there's the, you know, the presence of the ship itself, you know, this great honking, slightly decrepit looking.
Yeah, the sound
metal,
of the ship, the sound of the space,
Yeah. So actually I first of all decided I was going to subvert the orchestra most of the time. So the orchestra is processed using kind of old tech. We recorded it here at my studio, so it's a, you know, it's a big orchestra, it's a 70-piece orchestra. But it's all subverted using tech from the period that the production design is in. So the ship looks like it's from 1970.
Yeah.
So it's all analog processing, a load of old vocoders, lots of tape machines, all this kind of stuff. And then the other thing is I started thinking about, okay, so this ship is a big lump of metal. So I thought, okay, so I'm going to have metal resonating sounds. And actually most of what you hear in this throughout the movie is just these big metallic resonators. And so that's an ensemble of 12 timpani, which we recorded here. An amazing session with like 12 timps in the room with these guys just kind of hitting them in all different ways. Such a fun session. Crazy.
Wow.
I was like, why has no one done this before? Because this is great. This is like, so we did this kind of mad 12 timp session. And then the other thing was, I guess, thinking about, you know, it's a story about Bohemia. You know, he's a Czech astronaut. So then I started thinking about a kind of musical hinterland from there. And it just so happens there's a composer who's a contemporary of Bach who was called Zelenka. And I thought, it's just too good to be true, you know, that his name actually incorporates Lenka's name. So I was like, okay, so that's that. So I had a look into his work, and his work is like Bach, but on acid. It's like Bach, but it's crazy Bach. And I was like, this guy, this is my guy. So I just looked at the way he worked with harmony, and I wrote a bunch of kind of fake Zelenka. And so the orchestra, some of the time, is playing this music, which is sort of derived from this kind of weird Bohemian Baroque music. So it's all these kinds of elements kind of playing against one another.
I love doing with what I do is when I go down those kind of research, kind of prep, kind of routes of kind of, and you come out feeling like you've been on a course or something, or you've come out with like more knowledge sort of thing. Do you, you know, even where
Yeah.
you are now with your knowledge of music, but still learning new things or learning about new people's music that you might not have been that familiar with. Do you love that side of it?
Yeah. Well, completely. I mean, one of the great, privileges of doing creative work is you can learn all the time, always discovering new things. And, like writing a film score is a kind of, it's like a puzzle solving process. It's like, what is the music that kind of expresses the kind of deep aspects of this story? How do I discover the things that kind of feel innate to that world, and kind of why this sound? That for me is a really big question. And so, the metallic language for the spaceship, the Zelenka type material, the 70s vocoders, they all like emanate from the story. They're on the page, and all like the synths are all these kind of crazy old synths and stuff. So, so all of that, for me, that's like me building a kind of a framework around the story, like a musical kind of thing that can support it. And I can go, that's there because of this.
I think it's a wonderful thing as well, which a lot of filmmakers do as well, you know, when they're the preservation of things when it comes to film, whether it's filmmakers who, you know, are insistent on using film or whatever. But with music as well, it's got that beauty where nothing really ages in a way, in terms of, you know, you're talking about kind of wanting to go back and using technology from the 70s. Isn't it wonderful that there's this constant regeneration and reusage of instruments, of recording techniques, of production style. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're very lucky, aren't we? We've got all this amazing historical kind of hinterland of like all this technique and all these languages and all this technology and, instruments to draw on. And, that's a really deep and rich palette. Plus, of course, we've got everything that's going on now with all the kind of computer processing and all of those things. So, in a way, because we've got this sort of limitless palette, that also asks you a question. It's like, well, you can't, why this? So that's why I'm thinking, I really like things to kind of, in some way, like embody the story, the kind of language I'm using.
Another element to the film as well, because I feel like there are lots of layers and there are lots of kind of questions that the film throws up as well, with the whole the ads, you know, the adverts. He's in the middle of space, you know, in this kind of solitary, and he's got to throw out these kind of like spot ads for all these. It's bonkers and brilliant. Yeah, there's music to accompany a lot of those as well. So I'm assuming that was part of the ask as well, was kind of coming up with the kind of musical side of
Well,
those.
those were actually, it's funny, we thought about that a fair bit. And actually, we decided to use like period ad music.
Oh,
So those are
cool.
literally somebody scoured like music libraries from the 70s and actually just grabbed those little jingles because they're so brilliant. You just, in a way, like, let's use the real thing because they're great.
It is that kind of thing where there are certain products, aren't there, where you can almost go, I know exactly the drink. I remember that. I remember watching on the TV and stuff. There's the cue where he says, maybe you'd like to kill me. Sorry for my kind of ramblings of kind of when I'm watching something, I'm trying not to be distracted by having to make notes on things. So I write things down, and most of the time I can't read what I've written. But on this particular cue, I'd written a sort of a traditional piece of music, water, space, love, air, bubbling.
Yeah, that's one of the kind of main bits of like music, that kind of harmonic structure, which is, it comes a few times in the movie, and it's if you like, their kind of love story. It kind of starts out in kind of weird, vocoded, messed up orchestra language. And we see him sort of in this kind of dream state walking through this river. And then it's like a, it's like the princess and the frog, she's sort of up on this, and it's like very weird. And then the orchestra start kind of blazes slowly into focus, and you get this kind of color shift, register shift, and it all starts to feel really warm. And then there's a solo line in that material, which is a Mini Moog Model D from the 70s. It's that little guy over there
Whoa, look at that
by
setup.
the it's that little guy over there, which is like, for me, the Mini Moog is like, that is the sound of kind of space rock from the 70s. It's like, Hawkwind, it's Sun Ra, it's early Pink Floyd, it's all of that stuff, So I was like, I've got to get that in there. So I use that as their kind of, if you like, their kind of love theme. So it's a kind of spacey love music.
And there was another cue as well, which felt kind of really very still in little notes, where it's the line where the, my writing is terrible, death will not something find me.
So that's where Jakob and Hanush are sort of, they're doing their kind of, what is it? It's a kind of a goodbye. Yeah. We don't really know who's going to die and what's going to happen. But again, that's the sort of extended kind of infinite horizon music, because they're in deep space. They're in, the conceit is they're at kind of the beginning and the end of the universe at the same time. You know, it's very cosmic. So the orchestra plays these sort of big sustained tones. But they're, again, they're kind of subverted, and they're all in the Atmos, and it's all like super. It's not like underwater, but it's like, it feels like there's a huge distance in the music. I mean, there's a lot of score in the film. I mean, it plays, you know, I mean, this is very unusual for me, actually, because I always want less music. But actually, in this case, I felt like, you know, there's like the music is this kind of almost like it's this sort of amniotic fluid that the kind of story kind of floats in this space. And it just does need to be just kind of just transported along.
And then we have this brilliant song at the end.
Sparks.
It's so good.
Love those guys. Yeah, so I mean, you know, we thought about doing an end credit song. So I wrote a sketch, and then we were like, okay, so who's gonna sing this? Johan was friends with Sparks already, with the guys.
Yeah.
And so he just kind of sent it out to them, and they immediately were like, yeah, this is great. So they wrote some lyrics and the vocal parts. And what a pleasure, you know. I mean, for me, this was a real full circle moment, because, you know, I remember seeing them on Top of the Pops when I was about 11 or something, seeing, you know, this town ain't big enough for the both of us, and being absolutely terrified. I didn't know what was happening. I was like, I'd never seen anything like it. What was this insanity, you know? They're legendary, such nice people, and, you know, so talented. Don't go away, don't go away, don't go away, don't go away, don't go away. Please don't go, I'd be all alone. I need you, I need you. Please don't go, I'd be all alone. I need you, I need you. Don't go away, don't go away, don't go away, don't go away, don't go away. They're one of those bands that are like, they're musicians, musicians. So other musicians really love them and appreciate them because they know how amazing the work is. But they sort of faded a bit from view over the years. And now they've just had, over the last few years, this kind of, you know, renaissance, and very well deserved. I mean, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and it is that thing where you kind of listen to it and you go, oh, that's where they got it from. You know, when you think about
exactly. Everyone
that's been influenced by them.
I know, so influential.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I hear it. Absolutely. I know.
Yeah, I know. Totally. They're like this kind of source of like loads of other people's ideas.
Yeah. Then they're taking all it. They're off taking all the credit, and Sparks like, hold on a minute.
I know. Yeah, totally. I know. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
You know, in terms of kind of when you're creating something like that, that has its own, you know, it's a slightly different beast in a way, you know, because this could be a song that they play in their, you know, in their set. It's absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. but it's still got to fit in with the film and the narrative and the tone and stuff. Is that was it a different ask?
Well, I mean, I love songwriting. I love working with singers, and it's a fun thing to do. For me, it's a different thing, because it's fundamentally it's collaborative, and it's a different way of telling stories. But yeah, I mean, it had to be its own thing, but it also had to be deeply connected to the world of the film. It didn't want to feel like, oh no, it's something else. So yeah, I mean, we had to kind of figure out how best to kind of how it could be in a moment of its own, but also connect into the story. And I think that, works well. The guys did great.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. On that kind of sort of subject of kind of, sort of celebrating the work of, of an artist and stuff, and it's brilliant as well that we're getting the opportunity to celebrate some of your previous work as well with some new kind of versions and things that are coming up, whether it be, the anniversary of the Blue Notebooks or this reversion of Sleep as well. Do you mind talking a little bit about that? Because that's really exciting for, for people who
Not at
maybe
all,
weren't
yeah.
didn't have the opportunity to, back in 2015, was it with Sleep, if that opportunity of kind of being there and being in that moment as it was happening, but having an opportunity to kind of be there with a new version of it.
I mean, Sleep is a project which I love to play. We play it whenever we can, which is not that often, because it's really hard, because it's, overnight 8.5 hours. It's kind of a big deal to put together for lots of reasons. So it's in a way, it's like when you miss your kids, so when your kids leaves home, you miss them, So it's a bit like that with Sleep. I don't get to sort of spend that much time with it, but when we do play it, I really like it. So it's just nice to be able to revisit that material. And I've just made this, it's like a 3-track EP of, like, in a way, stripped back versions of the material. It's just solo piano versions, which recorded here at our place. And yeah, it's just nice to take another trip and take another look at that piece.
And if you've got this event at the BFI, is that what can you?
We have, in March 17, we're doing a 90-minute, it's an experiment, it's like it's an immersive live film mixed for the IMAX, which we recorded here last year. And we're really happy with it. We felt like it was I mean, it was fun to do, but it also felt like it really worked. I mean, it's really interesting, I think, with a big project like this, you can sort of walk around it and sort of glimpse at it from different angles. And yeah, I mean, I thought it would be nice to make a cinema version, almost like, I mean, it's a movie, but it's also a performance, but it's also an installation, or it's a just close your eyes.
It's a disco nap as opposed to
Disco nap. I like that.
And then what about kind of, for you personally celebrating, the Blue Notebooks turning 20, sort of what does that mean for you and how are you celebrating that?
Well, I mean, for me, I can't really believe it's 20 years since we recorded the Blue Notebooks. It seems kind of like yesterday, and I'm still working with those guys. And I mean, it's a piece we play, fair bit. We have played a fair bit over the years. And I mean, it's always special. I guess it's the I mean, for me personally, in terms of my work, when I mean, we recorded the Blue Notebooks in about half a day.
No
We had like one
way.
session. We had one session. We had no money. It was like, I remember having to, like, borrow the tube fare off of some bloke who was in the studio, because I had no money. Nobody had any money. It was like, let's just make this record. And Fat Cat, bless them, sort of had faith in it. I mean, it was a kind of a big turning point for me. And the fact that it's 20 years old, that seems crazy, but I guess it is.
Thank you. could you imagine doing that now, you know, in terms of like doing something in half a day?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes it's good, you know, just to kind of, you know, put it down, you know.
Yeah.
I think we can get a bit sort of, you know, careful, you know, and it's good to actually just go, let's just do this and see what happens, you know.
Yeah.
You know, keeping that kind of, you know, permission to fail is really important, I think, with creative work. You know, you need to be able to go, let's just try this, and then like, oh no, that's a disaster. That's fine. You know, it's because again, you know, it's an opportunity to learn new things. I mean, there are no rules, are there? Sometimes you'll sit down and you'll be like, I'm going to do this now. And oh no, you're not, you know, because it's just not happening. And other times you walk in the room, noodle around a bit, and it's like, wow, where did that come from? But, you know, it's finished. So, you know, we have to sort of ride our luck a bit and be very sort of open to what's going on. Sometimes we get lucky.
I had the absolute privilege of getting to speak to Mr. Martin Scorsese recently. I had a little cry after that. It was such a moment. And then Denis Villeneuve as well. And today I was thinking, oh my God, they both used On the Nature of Daylight as well, you know, Shutter Island and then An Arrival as well.
I mean, for me, that Shutter Island license was, you know, hugely important, because that was really the first time anyone outside of the kind of indie, sort of beardy indie world kind of heard my stuff. You know what I mean? It was like people in Hoxton knew about it, but nobody else did. And then Martin Scorsese wants to license your track. I'm like, and not only that, but Robbie Robertson, you know, is his music guy. And I was like, oh my God, because I'm a huge Dylan fan. So, I mean, you know, everything about that was just cosmic for me.
Such a powerful piece of music still. It's sort of, it's just a, an extraordinary thing. Do you have lots of different, I imagine you kind of got lots of different things going on at the one time, you know, in terms of, because you do so many different types of things, whether it is, you know, outside the film composition, you know, you're constantly creating for yourself and doing all sorts of different wonderful things. But is it important for you to have lots of different things going on at the same time, or do you have to kind of just straight on with one thing at a time? Or
I mean, there are usually a few things floating about. I mean, I like to have like one main kind of focus. Like, you know, the last few months I've been working on a new record, so that's been my kind of main thing. And then, but there have been other things as well, and I think for me, you know, it feels natural to kind of follow my enthusiasms. You know, I mean, that's one of the great privileges of doing creative work. You know, you get to just do stuff you kind of fall in love with. You know, I've just done some music for a, you know, not a big ballet, but a ballet in Stockholm, the Royal Ballet there, with a new choreographer, a young choreographer, who, you know, I just thought was fantastic. So that was fun, you know. And, you know, I'm doing, you know, other sort of scoring things and recording things all the time. So, you know, I do feel very lucky, very kind of privileged to be in this situation where I can just kind of sort of engage with the kind of playful aspect of creative work, because that's really what it is, you know. It's that sort of mind.
Yeah.
And that's very fertile.
What can you tell us about the new record?
The new record is, it's instrumental music. It's written for a smallish ensemble. So, you know, like the solo, first few solo records, that kind of a scale. Yeah, I'm intrigued by it, you know. I sort of finished it a little while ago. You know, the other day I managed to listen through to all of it without sort of having a heart attack. So that was good.
Good sign.
good sign. So we're making progress. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm excited about it.
When will it be birthed to the world?
It's going to come later this year.
With some live shows, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Amazing. Just before we go, with this, you know, with soundtracks and that relationship between sound and music and film, we love getting recommendations from people. And I wondered whether there was, for you, a moment where you really fully appreciated that relationship. You talked about sparks and watching them on TV and going, oh my God, what is this? But when it comes to film and having a realization of the importance of music and how important that is to the storytelling, is there a film or a moment where you first recognized that, do you think?
Well, I guess since we're in the realm of sci-fi, I mean, 2001 was like, for me as a kid, when I watched that, I was, you know, life-changing, really. I mean, obviously, it's all needle drops. Well, I mean, there was a composed score, but it was dumped. But so we've got Strauss, we've got Ligeti, we've got, you know, all this extraordinary music. I mean, that's pure cinema, pure images, and incredible music, and sort of put together in this fantastically kind of, you know, partly, you know, some of the time it's romantic, some of the time it's just deeply psychedelic sort of trippiness. You know, and I just thought, wow, that's not bad.
Is there a soundtrack that for you is the, if you're going to say to someone, there's one soundtrack you listen to, you have to listen to this?
I mean, there are so many great ones. I mean, I love, for example, a lot of the early stuff from, you know, Nino Rota and Morricone and those, because they have kind of, in a way, traditional, like, composerly virtues, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're just beautifully made on a kind of instrumental level and on an orchestration level. They're fantastic, you know, great melodies. But equally, some of the more experimental stuff that's been going on over the last few years with kind of electronics and sound design sort of fusing into scoring, that's a pretty interesting space too. So I would say we're actually in a really interesting and exciting moment in terms of, you know, music for images, music for, you know, TV, for cinema, because there seems to have been a kind of, because I guess directors are, they want the kinds of things they like listening to. You know, they're not necessarily want something that sounds like Tchaikovsky. They want something that sounds like whatever band or whatever DJ they've just heard, or, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of very heartened by that, really. It seems to be wide open.
It's so great to chat to you. Very excited about, you know, I mean, this film I just thoroughly enjoyed. Like I said, I really did. I just kind of was in, and I was with it for the whole. And so much of that is down to what you've created with the music. I'm very excited about the celebrations as well this year, and look forward to the new record.
Brilliant. Great to talk to you.
You too, Max. Take care. Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
From the score to Spaceman, that's Distance and Time, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the wonderful Max Richter. My huge thanks to Max for taking the time to talk to me. Spaceman is available to watch on Netflix now and is well worth your time, if only to see Adam and Katie delivering the goods once again. If you'd like to hear my previous conversations with Max, included, in fact, the live show that he did for us at the BFI, then head to edithbowman.com, where you'll find every other single episode of the podcast. Follow us on socials. We are at Soundtracking UK. If you want to drop us an email, we'd love to hear from you. It's info@edithbowman.com. And please do subscribe to our YouTube channel. We are Soundtracking Extra. My interview with Denis Villeneuve and Hans Zimmer is going down very well. Thank you to everybody who's watched that so far, for leaving your comments and all that kind of stuff. So we really appreciate it. Next up, the series is already out there, the brand new series of True Detective. Been a big fan of this show, and this latest installment has been written and directed by Isa Lopez. It's really out there. It's got a really sort of female-focused narrative. Jodie Foster takes the lead in this. It's a brilliant, brilliant show. So if you haven't checked it out yet, please do go and check it out. It's on Sky here in the UK, HBO in the States, and I guess relevant streamers wherever you may be in the world. So get on it, and then join us next week for Isa Lopez, our latest guest on Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.